Welcome to the Smart Water Solutions Podcast. I'm Hakim Elfadil. This is episode 69. Today we are bringing a water topic that might not always be at the forefront of our mind, but is very important: water leaks. It's a problem that affects not just our water bills, but also our environment. Every day, countless tons of water are lost due to leaks, impacting water scarcity and contributing to environmental stress. In our chat today, we will be exploring a range of topics with Valerie Fest. We will start by learning about her unique journey from being a physicist to entering the water industry, bringing a fresh perspective to this field. Valerie will also explain the technology behind PipeRedict, explaining in simple terms how they use data and sensors to predict water leaks. We will also explore how PipeRedict adapts to various water systems, each with its own set of challenges, and discuss the significant environmental impact of water leaks. Looking forward, Valerie will share insight into the future directions of PipeRedict company and water management. Plus, for those who interested in tech and entrepreneurship, she will offer some valuable advice from her own experience. Welcome, Valerie. So the first question is how your career has been shifted from as a physicist to the water industry.
Okay, so it was kind of accidentally. I actually wanted to do a PhD based on my master thesis because it wasn't going very well. However, in the end, it didn't work out. And then I joined like a startup company because I needed a job for like 3 months because my professor was on his not vacation time, but in Germany they get like 1 or 2 semesters of studies, and I needed for him to return in order to defend my master thesis so that I would actually get a mark and could look for a real job. So in that startup company there was one of the co-founders, and he was like, oh, Valerie, come on, let's do this gecko challenge, I really want to go to Japan this year, it's in Japan, I always wanted to publish there. And then we were like, okay, let's do this shit. It was actually about water quality. And it's the first time I noticed that pattern recognition actually works for water quality. However, our pattern recognition was too slow, because for water quality, you need to know instantly when it's starting to turn over, because it's very dangerous. I mean, you don't want to drink non-portable water. Yeah. So it wasn't quick enough for that. And then I met there another professor from Hong Kong, and he was like, well, pattern recognition might not be the solution for water quality. However, have you ever thought about water leakages? And then he told me about the Hong Kong problem. So basically in Hong Kong, that was still when it was not part of China completely, but still like under the British government's governance and all that. And they actually import their water from mainland China, and it's really expensive. However, they did lose back then, I think, 30% of their water, although through the last 10 years, they had like a renovation plan. And they statistically analyzed, okay, this pipe should be done new and this one, but it didn't help. They were still at 30% after this. So they made a public tender to actually reduce the leakages within Hong Kong down to 10%. We partnered up with the startup I was working at, and then we like flew there, joined with Siemens, took part in the public tender. Of course, we didn't get it because they were like, yeah, what's your track record in like water leak detection? We were like, well, we have an idea. And that is when it all started. After that, we got Hesny Dänsch Stipendium that gave us the time to actually analyze the market, see that there's a real need, especially with now the climate change and the rising temperature, the rising water stress. So we were like, yeah, okay, this is a real business model now. And we started building the company. Yeah,
that's interesting. And the core problem that the company you're solving is actually there is a leakage. Just for the audience to understand, there is a huge leakage in terms of water infrastructure, everywhere in the world.
Yeah, so you have some regions within Europe where it's actually 50%, especially regions which already have a lot of water stress. Water stress basically means that the naturally available, portable, or easy to be treated portable water is less than the demand of the population. You have, for example, Spain, Portugal, and also regions of France. that lose more than 50% of the water they pump into their distribution networks. And you might think like, oh, no worry, it's water. It's good for the trees and the environment. Well, actually, it is not, because until it reached to your house, energy was put into actually pumping this water up, then afterwards into treating it, then into pressurizing it and transporting it to your house. Meaning it's not only water being lost, but also the energy, also the CO2 it produces, and the cost, which actually in most European countries, you as a client pay.
So yeah, that's exactly. I think I had a podcast in the past with someone who is developing an algorithm to for the water utility to really pump the water when the energy cost is lower. And then he told me around, I think if I'm not mistaken, around 30% of the cost of the water is coming from the energy that they supply.
Yes, that's also why, for example, water in Germany is way more expensive than in France or in Spain, although we have less water stress than those countries.
Okay. And then the interesting also, I was really interested when I put the name, the pipe predicts. Predict. And then before Pipe Predict was another different name.
Aqua, Solution Aqua.
Okay.
That was when we still weren't founded. We needed a working name. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Pipe Predicts, I think maybe the name really says so many about you.
Yeah. Basically, the leakages, and you have to imagine. So in water, you actually have like a small leak, and over the duration of up to like 2 years or even 5 years, it grows and grows and then turns into a pipe burst. And then you're like, what happened here? The road just collapsed, cars get swallowed. It's like really bizarre scenes. And I mean, you even had that 2017 in Berlin. So it's not like from outer space. It's really happening here in Germany as well. However, the question is, how the hell did this happen? Well, the pipes are buried under the earth and the utilities don't really know what is going on. So that is the interesting part, that we actually do early leak detection, meaning we detect a leak when it still has about 1.5 years to grow at least. And then we actually track the growth rate and we do alerts of, hey, you only have now half a year left before this is probably going to turn into a pipe burst. So they can actually schedule their repairs, because many utilities don't have the money, and sometimes it's even not economic to repair all the leaks, to actually plan and their resources to do the best maintenance they can do with the budget they have.
Yeah, in terms of the hardware, I mean, could you lay out the technology? So you get the data from the water utilities, or you put different sensors? So how it's working?
We do both. So that's actually one of our unique selling points, that we work on already existing data, that we are able to get this data and understand it. And then also we do a thing that's called optimal sensor placement. It basically automatically simulates a leak in each node. So we take the real world network, we convert it into a digital twin, which has a graph running in the background. So that's where the network theory comes in. And then we don't want to place a bunch of sensors, because first of all, it's a high cost. It's a high maintenance cost to exchange the batteries. It's annoying. You have to gather the data, blah, blah, blah. So we go there, we see what is your existing hardware. And if we don't get to the wished for leak precisions, they tell us, no, we want a 5 meters leak precision instead of 50 meters, what you can actually do with most of the already installed hardware. Then we run the optimal sensor placement, and basically it takes the network, creates a leak in each node, and then tells us where the leak signals are like the strongest and where we can best place the sensors. And after that, we do an optimization problem, which is basically just, okay, we have this budget, and then we have a bunch of different sensors with like the ranges they have, the error margins, blah, blah, blah. We take those different sensors and place them at these good sensor data points, and we just optimize for most detected leaks, most leak localization areas close to the range, and the economic costs of it.
Yes, it's basically, so it's basically, if I understood correctly, so you get data from the water utility, you have this digital twin, integration, and you try to spot which area more susceptible to be leaky in 1.5 years. You put the sensors there, you process again, and then you find.
We don't look at which one is most probably leaking, because that is the statistic approach. I mean, we do identify our pilot areas like that. The company comes and they're like, hey, we have 50 cubic meters of loss. We don't know which area it comes from. Then we do the statistical analysis. That is actually part of Proventio's know-how. I would say, like, most likely it's from this area. And in that area, we do the simulation, which I already told you that we have the graph, and in each node, so basically every 10 meters apart from each other, we simulate a leak. We say, now here you have a leak of 1 cubic meter you have per hour, you have one of 10 cubic meters, blah. And then we just randomly place the sensors in locations that have strong leak signal reception. So you have to imagine if a leak occurs in, for example, and you have acoustic sensors, then you know that you don't want to place it close to an intersection, because the probability of getting good noises there is way less. You do want to place it on a straight pipe and mostly close to those points. If you have pressure, for example, you know that a pressure hammer can travel up to like 20 or 50 kilometers through a pipe. It's really amazing how far they can travel. But you know, for example, that you have turbulences if, for example, you place it also close to an intersection, stuff like that. So these points are already gone. And then we just put the sensors at different locations and see with the simulations which leaks we can detect and how many and with which leak precision.
Mm-hmm. And which kind of sensors you are using?
Yeah. Everything. So we have flow rate, we have pressure, and we have acoustic. For water networks, I don't like acoustic a lot because of the different materials. So if you only have steel, like in the old district heating things, this sound can travel pretty far, up to like 1 kilometer. But if you have the PE, like the plastic pipes, it does not travel very far. It's like 500, 600 meters at tops. So, and then the mixture of the different materials, it's like a wave. Like an optical wave, you know, when it hits the water and it bends. So you don't really want to use acoustic that much in water, unless you have a bunch of money and it's no problem to place a sensor every 300 meters.
Yeah.
But it's the most precise, actually. So with acoustic, you get down to a leak localization precision of less than 3 meters.
Yeah, and the let's say the recipe of the invention or uniqueness of pipe predict is it the hybrid simulation system that you have, part is modeling, part is empirical, and then you marry them both and then you get something very.
So our acoustic solution is completely empirical. That okay. One is really easy and yeah. Just pretty nice to do. Our flow rate and our pressure is a little bit different. You could call it a hydraulic model. However, that's where we differ from the rest, because we are actually able to work with asynchronous sensor data. This enables us to use already existing sensor data, because come on, not all the pressure sensors have UTRC clocks. So it's not possible to make all of them measure at the same exact time point. So we can actually work with a data point every 10 minutes. This works very good because we use pattern recognition in the leak localization, which is also, I think, two other companies do it, but it's not very common in this area of work. Then we can actually detect the leak early on due to the pattern recognition, which leaves us enough time to localize it. Because normally, if you do pressure simulation, you either have really expensive, the transient pressure sensors, man, they are very fancy because they have a really high temperature time resolution. However, they are expensive and they consume a lot of power, meaning either your battery lifetime is short or you need power supply. And I mean, it's the water network. You don't really have that choice there. So we said, okay, we have a data point every 10 minutes. They are not the same. We do work with a sort of hydraulic model, but it's very heavily based on simulations because we don't actually know the demands at each house. we might know what is being pumped into the zone, but maybe not all inlets are covered. So this is actually our trade secret. And most I can say, we call it the generalized hydraulic model. And it's very heavily based on simulations and just getting one data point after the other. For example, we can do a rough leak localization within 30 minutes up to 1 hour. If it's a big burst, come on, that's easy. It's like most, like worst case scenario, the rough one is done in 20 minutes. A big leak is like not that hard to find. But for the leak localization, for the precise one, we do need time. We need like 2 weeks sometimes to gather enough data points. So that's where we differ. But as we find it early enough, it's mostly not a problem for them. We find leakages they don't even know about. So it's good.
I was about to ask when you mentioned, I was thinking that, correct me if I'm wrong, because the different places where you are covering, for example, in Germany, you may have different range of hardware. So how do you manage that you have compatibility between all those hardwares? It's really...
Okay. So that is like one very interesting question. You are one of the first one to actually ask it. What we do is we actually gather the data sheets from them, and we have certain information. We always have to be very careful about it. One of them is their error margin, the deviation from nullpunkt, stuff like that. We take all of this into account, but also most sensors that are new, like bought in the last 10 years, don't actually give you the real value they measured. They sometimes give you the root, mean square, the median, the mean. We have seen everything. And this part is very important to know. And we differentiate how we treat these different KPIs if it's not raw data. We always prefer raw data because that's actually the key of knowing what is going on. But sometimes we don't get it, and how we manage it is, as I already said, we very specifically have for each KPI, the algorithm takes it into account and like decomposes it into the most likely real value that has been measured in accordance to what we have seen previously and what the nearest neighbor sensors of the sensor we are looking at have measured. And it's not only per region. You have to imagine we have one very big client, and actually in their network, they are using 10 different types of sensors. So like the material and the age of the pipes, the sensor vary a lot.
I can imagine. It's not an easy, it's a very challenging point to do that. And then I would assume it's more or less similar to different type of pipes, because you may need to consider different data points because you have different type of construction of pipe and the age of the, so it's a challenging type of data. So how deep you get to feed, I mean, what it, another question is, what is the level of so many data that you feed to your algorithm to get a pattern? So how many? Because I'm thinking so much. What is the limit that you said, okay, this is enough?
The good thing is now that we had two of our pilot clients who were really, really nice about it. I mean, we also gave them a very nice price for being so nice with the data to us. And they allowed us to pre-train pattern recognition on their networks, meaning that now if we go into a new water network, we already have learned a bunch of different patterns. Then normally we are active for 7 days where we need to work very closely with the utilities. They need to tell us if they had any construction, if they switched off a valve, if there has been a leak in that time. And after that, we are like ready to do the first validation. That normally goes like this. We tell them, okay, now we set up, the leak detection is online. Please, whenever you feel like it, open a hydrant, let escape the minimum volume loss you wanted in your pilot project to actually be able to detect. And they do this. We normally are able to detect it. And the nice thing about that is then they tell us where it's actually placed, because we can use that information and also the volume loss is, we are told this, we can use this to calibrate the network. That is a really important part, because in water, you should calibrate your water network every 5 or 10 years, because the inner diameter changes a lot because of Ablagerung. How do you say that in English?
It's kind of fouling, I would say.
What?
It's kind of fouling, scaling, that you would have.
Scaling, I think that's scaling. The word, yeah. So the calibration is a really important part in order to do a precise leak localization if you're using flow rate and pressure. We do that automatically each time that we have an anomaly where the velocity of the water is higher than the measurement error. So that is automatically we detect anomalies, and this one is yes, you're higher, no, you're lower. If you're higher, then we use you to calibrate it. How does that work when we don't know where this signal originated from? Well, we have two sensors picking it up. We know the shortest path in terms of roughness, although it could be walking another path, and that's how we calibrate it. And then you can say, yeah, but this is super accurate because you don't know where it's localized. This is why we use a bunch of different anomalies event, and we do it continuously, meaning that actually over the time of 1 year, we are mostly very accurate in our calibrated system. And with each report of an construction site or something, we can actually get the location from that. So we always ask our client to, in the first 3 months, please send us all the reports of construction, of leakages, of valves shutting off, anything that we can use for a calibration. And then after these first 3 months, normally we're actually done mostly after 4 weeks in bigger areas. If it's a small suburban region at the end of the network, of course, not a lot is happening. But mostly we're done after 4 weeks, and we are even ready to go on with the precise leak localization.
And this precise leak localization, I would like to get kind of a rough number. So what is the average precision of your leakage localization?
That depends a lot. So we have one project where we are actually monitoring 180 kilometers with only 14 sensors. So that one is the toughest one. And we are down to a leak precision of 80 meters. Then we have another network where we only have 10 kilometers, but 9 sensors. And here we actually get down to 8 to 15 meters. So it depends a lot on what do you want. Do you roughly want to know which roads to walk down while you're doing the manual acoustic leak detection, or do you just want to know which street do I dig up?
Yeah, and then how do you handle, I would assume while doing this, you face so many challenges. How have you handled those false positives or negatives?
The false positives are a funny story. So some of our clients are okay, if it's just a mid-size leak, just say we have a time trigger. If in 6 hours it was triggered every 10 or 20 minutes, then send us a notification. And the other ones are more challenging, because then we have to be very, very good in the training. And then we actually mostly ask for not only one validation where they open a hydrant and later on tell us where and blah. We actually ask them to 3 to 10 of these events, or if they're already going to do a Spülung to keep clean the pipes, then we can also use that. But it's hard if they want to know it very, very quickly. I mean, for the big leaks, that's pretty simple, because come on, pressure drops are whoa. We had one big leak where we actually immediately, it's not a leak, you could actually call it a burst, although it was only later on seen getting above the street, but we actually had a drop of 2 bars. That was really insane. We were hello, you have a fucking huge leak. We currently can't localize it, but we have it roughly, we had it down to 800 meters. Although the wished for leak precision was only down to 20 meters they wanted. But at least we notified them directly, so they were actually able to walk the streets and already find it. That is also one funny thing. Sometimes those 800 meters are not connected roads, because you have Similar to an electric cycle, because you're a sensor person. So, you know, when you have a resistor, basically pipes are the same. They have a certain resistance, and you have special pipes that are really shitty for the resistance, meaning that you have like aisles, or we call them clusters of resistance. And you actually know very, very well where this signal originated. It could be A to B, this cluster, or it could be this cluster. And then with the precise one, we sometimes get two streets of the first cluster and like three streets of the second cluster. So that's one of our weird things that occurs. I don't actually know if other companies have the same thing, but it can actually happen.
Oh, quite challenging, I would say. And in terms of, I mean, prediction, that also takes me to the prediction analysis. So I know it depends, but you can give me, I mean, roughly from where to where, how far in advance can you ensure, can you predict potential pipe bursts, let's say?
Okay, so currently, before the merger, we were only able to do it really good with acoustic, because the more corroded a pipe is, the worse the shift in frequency and the dampening of the amplitude is. That is empirical. That is pretty simple to do. Okay, there's one empirical part, which is the material science behind it, but mostly telling you about leaks that do not occur, for example, in district heating with temperature rising up, but talking about normal water networks without pressure hammers, we are down to about 5 months. We are able to tell you, okay, you have now 5 months left and it's going to be a really burst. But if we do, for example, pressure or flow rate, this is also one of the reasons why we joined forces with Preventium. We had it on to like, we have that many pressure sensors, meaning that the current stress level is quite high. We don't have a lot of flow, meaning you have a lot of scaling, blah, blah, blah. We took all that into account and we were able to then, if we detected a leak, see how it is growing. And due to the material, we were like, okay, this is more likely to burst. But here we were only able to like tell you within a window of the next really 8 to 1.5 years it's going to burst. So the window was very big. We're still doing the first POC now with the Preventio approach, because they have way more material science knowledge than we do and a lot better statistical analysis algorithms that we have. So we use their new algorithms to do the historic stress level. And then we come in and say, okay, now we actually have the current stress level. So please rebuild this for the past. Then give me a risk score for this pipe. And the next step is, okay, now this pipe, which already has a risk score of like 80%, actually has a leak. And this leak is growing pretty fast. So we are quite confident that we will probably get down to like a window of about 6 to 8 months. So that is our goal.
That's way
quite
too much.
Ambitious.
Yeah. 6 months. I mean, even months, is it really important based on your experience for water utilities? So what is the minimum time frame that they would prefer to have? Let's say, what is
probably
the limit? Is it,
I mean, you do the budget planning for the next year.
Exactly.
So we're talking about at least 1 year. They would like to know this pipe is going to burst next year. Of course, it would be better to be down at the quarter. So 3 or 4 months would be the optimum, I guess. That's what our clients have told us. But we are open for feedback. I think probably the more precise, the better. But
yeah. And then you mentioned Preventio. Is it the one that's...
That we are merging with. Yes.
It's a big fish.
Now you understand why we're merging. It has a lot of strategical potential. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. And then I think maybe in 1-2 years now, we'll ask you this question, but I can ask you right now anyway, which is from your experience working with algorithms and pattern recognition as an IT person, how challenging to merge two, let's say, giants algorithms together to make them communicate with each other? Is it something easy doable, or it really takes teamwork?
It takes teamwork, definitely. Okay. For example, I'm very good at pattern recognition and I'm very good at network theory. But for the whole magic behind the scenes that, for example, we detect a leak, then the leak tracker is activated. That's like basically when I told you sometimes we are just very lazy and just wait for 6 hours and then it's like we notify. And after that, actually our leak localization, the rough one, is automatically switched on. At the same time, the precise leak localization switch up, all that stuff, all that triggering is done by my co-founder, Duke. So I'm very, very sorry. I'm really like the research and I do the first development. And then Duke does all the magic behind the scenes and looks that everything is running smoothly, efficiently, reliable, and way more optimized.
If I would ask you to lay out this network theory for someone who's not so experienced in IT, how would you explain it to me?
Okay, a network, in mathematics, it's called a graph. A graph has nodes and edges. So the edges are the pipes and the nodes are everything else. For example, ball valves, normal valves, shutoff valves, ends of the pipes, end clients, transfer station, inlets, outlets, swells, everything. And basically all of these different edges and nodes have attributes. This is also part of the digital twin. So for example, for a pipe, it's super, super important for us to know the roughness and also the absolute acoustic attenuation coefficient, it would be in English. Yeah. And then we have for the nodes, it's also important. They have like a fake consumption there. For example, if you have an intersection, you know, for the pressure, you will have some kind of dampening. So this is an imperial value you put in depending on if it's a T section, or for example, if your pipe has a bend of 90 degrees, stuff like that. And yes, then you can actually see, for example, my swell is connected to end client one, end client two. For end client one, it runs through pipe one and pipe two. For end client two, it's run through pipe one, pipe three, and pipe four. So you can do an accumulated roughness and you can actually send signals down that edge till the end client. And then you can actually calculate how your original sensor, for example, sometimes in larger regional areas, you have it that the pumps are switched off in the night for like maintenance and stuff like that. Then the pump is switched off. And then when it turns on, you get like this high pressure peak, which is very good for calibration. You can then use this to see, okay, my signal started at 6 bar, end client two receives 5.7 bar, but end client one receives 5.4 bar. And then we do the calibration. And the good thing is that like pipe number one is run through not only one time, but two times. And we have two signals to compare it to. So that is what graph theory is fascinating for. You can interconnect everything, and through that interconnection, you gain information of the real world network.
And how scalable if you would take really big city with vast majority, so many sensors, so many pipe network, how it's scalable this? I mean, I'm not talking about network, I'm talking about your concept, how scalable it is.
Okay, first of all, coming in. So we started out as a leak detection algorithm, but actually to get to the part where we were able to do leak detection, it was a lot of work because many, especially the smaller utilities, they don't have the budget, they don't have the know-how of having a good IT infrastructure. If you go to the big cities in Germany, most of them already have a hydraulic model, they do the calibrations, it's very structured data, really, really nice. But then you go to the smaller ones and you get a GIS data set with missing end clients, missing pipes, missing valves, missing connections. So we actually created a whole software that takes their GIS data automatically, does the best magic with it. In the worst case scenario, it's still like 20% manual work left in order to get a digital twin. So normally for our clients, it's like 8 hours work, so one working day of a person that is their GIS expert. But then if you go to the really good cities, like the really good cities, it's like 2 hours of work for them and that's it. And then we already have the graph. And then with the graph, we can do everything. It's really easy and simple. The only thing we had a problem of scalability that is solved now, for luck, was in the district heating department. But the water is quite fine because you have a bunch of very, very good sensors available that also have a good connectivity. Connectivity is a big issue. So many of our pressure sensors, because we like to use pressure sensors, I mean, flow rate sensors, first of all, they're more expensive in getting them, but then for installing them, you have to tear up the street, you have to connect them to power, you have to connect them via cable for data transmission, blah, blah, blah. A lot of costs, and yeah, it's not very popular. So we went there and said, okay, then instead of flow rate, let's do pressure, because if we have the pressure at this point, we can simulate the flow rate. And that was very good because our clients like it a lot and it's really easy to set up and they're very good pressure sensors out there. However, this comes with the problem of hydrants because we like to use hydrants for this. First of all, you have the firemen, people who are like, please don't occupy it. But for example, one time they used one of our hydrants, which had a sensor installed. We just put like information sheets there and they called and said like, hey, we have your sensor. So somebody went and picked it up. But the problem with hydrants, if they are underneath the earth, they are Faradaysche Käfig, so they're all metal. For a signal to get out of there, it's really screwed up. That was one of our scalability issues. We actually resolved it now. We very much like to go into LoRa because it's very safe that we get data. Or if they don't have LoRa, sometimes that areas are covered by Sigfox, even though it's you need to pay for it and stuff like that. But it's the other solution we like a lot. We also like narrowband IoT and we dislike GSM because if you have bad weather, you don't get a signal. And in Germany, we have like it tends to be bad weather quite often.
Right. And you are able to ensure, I mean, to achieve real-time monitoring for
every 10
sensor.
Minutes?
Yes.
It's not real-time. Real-time would be the expensive pressure transmit sensors. No, so every 10 minutes, we normally tend to get one data point.
Okay.
So we could call it real-time, but it could be more time resolution. Yeah.
Super. And here, when it comes to, let's say, the outcome of your solution, which is the cost efficiency. I mean, if you implement pipe predicts, so you can give us just an idea about the impact overall cost efficiency for small and big. And then maybe you can, I'm assuming if this is true for Germany, where the cost of the water is not so high compared to other area, I think your solution may be much valuable in an area where the water is so expensive.
Yes. So first of all, in Germany, water isn't actually that cheap. In certain regions of Europe, it's a lot cheaper. But coming to the point of just talking about Germany. So normally, if we do, let's not look at city or countryside. Let's look at the precision they want, because that's the triggering costs. Our highest cost is the first installation, if they want to get very precise. But if they like, we have 180 meters, we are fine with 14 sensors, we only want to know 80 meter precision, then actually the money comes back in within a period of 1 year. But if they want to get very precise, the money they spend on the first installation plus our software cost, plus like also taking into account the battery changing, the battery cost, blah, then we are at about 1 year and 8 months. So yeah, 2 years nearly.
You mean the payoff?
To pay off, yeah.
To pay off.
But for the long run after that, I mean, we charge basically nothing. We charge based on the average water loss of that region.
Yeah, which is reasonable, I would say. And in terms of learning, I mean, when you get the data, you train your model, you learn something. So that learning, do you leverage that learning to other place or other place? They say, no, don't.
First of all, we are in Germany. So in order to be able to train on the data of those clients and then use it for a model which will be used at other clients, we need their permission.
Okay.
So not all clients are like, yeah, you have our permission. Then it's like, okay, nope, you don't want to get in problems. And that's why we actually only had two clients who allowed this for us. And we were like, okay, come on, thank you so much. And we gave them a percentage off from the normal price, exactly because they allowed us to do it. And it just helps so much to already go in with the pre-trained model. It also saves a lot of time for our new clients. And I mean, the more data we get, the better we are. And now currently we are actually thinking about, so first of all, we also have industry parks as clients. And we thought like, yeah, we can do water in like big cities, no problem. We can do it in industry park. Man, it's so different.
Really?
So then we actually thought about, okay, we're splitting our models. We have one for normal water supply for cities. We have one for industry parks. But now actually looking at the cities, we are seeing differences. First of all, based on the total demand, but also based on the amount of soils we have and how interlooped the network is. And we're thinking about how to best split those models. But I mean, until more clients decide to actually allow us to use their data, it's theory.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, this takes me to really a philosophical question. Mm-hmm. It's not a question of your concept, which is, so why do we allow to, if a bunch of human like team is working in one place and they move to other place, we allow them to use their learning, which is the know-how, the experience, whatever we call it, and why we don't allow it to machine learning, to algorithms?
That is a very good question. I mean, coming into the theory, it's always the question, what do you do with that data? Because I mean, you could misuse data. You've seen that the guy from the Xerox scandal, and then like a newspaper wrote a bad comment about him, and he actually only went to publicly available data, and he was like, that dude most probably working there has an affair with this girl also working there, just like from their vacation schedule and their Facebook posts. So that is something of misuse, but I mean, it was public information, and Facebook, everyone decides what they want to publish. But you could say the same, for example, I mean, it's not that big of a case for water utility. I mean, we could misuse it and tell some terrorists, like, put poison this amount into that one to kill off the people in the hospital or something like that. But the other point in industry, for example, if we will go into chemicals and stuff like that, they have patents, they have trade secrets, so they might don't want somebody to know how much of each chemical they are consuming with what time difference in between and stuff like that. So I do understand that you see the risk, but I also ask, especially the Germans, to also see the benefit, not only think about the risk side, because that is what most people do in Germany. I know in the US, it's completely different. There's like, ooh, AI, nice. How can you make my life more easy? Oh, this sounds amazing. And then like after some steps, they're like, okay, what are the risks? In Germany, it's the other way around. It's like, what's the worst case scenario? That our patents are being robbed. And then they're like all the other worst case scenarios. And after that, they tend to look at the benefit. However, especially in the water industry, we have a lot of very, very qualified Wassermeister, but they're old and the know-how is old, and AI for them is like, ooh, it's a black box, it's dangerous. But I mean, AI is something, in the end, it all comes down to a bunch of if clauses and a bunch of laws. Unless you do unsupervised or like real deep AI, the AI we're talking about, for example, pattern recognition is officially recognized as AI. But I mean, it's learning from patterns you have seen and targeted before. It's nothing that hilarious. It's nothing dangerous. It doesn't bite you in the ass. And also, all the risks, somebody could just hack into your water Leitwartenstelle, like your water data center, and steal all that data and abuse it. So,
yeah, but maybe I think I didn't get the point properly in terms of, let's say, the pattern recognition. That's the way how I asked the question. I mean, if I take your algorithm was in T0 and then T1 has learned something. And then I empty it from the data. Now it's empty, but it's smart. See what I mean? It's like, it knows like, if you have this pressure, this is happening. But yes, without the first data, it doesn't know this information. So my point is, if it learns something and I empty it from the data, so what is the danger for the people who give the data?
There is no real danger to them, but it's their fright of all the things I just told.
Yeah, that's, I see it from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, they can... also,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just the fright that somebody abuses this data. And I mean, maybe Germany is like down this path because power has been abused with Hitler. So maybe that's why everybody, or like, first of all, sees the worst case scenario. I don't know. It's just a very German personality. Also, our first client was not in Germany. The first time we got data, we partnered up with another startup and we weren't even founded yet. And they knew everything about it and they were completely fine with it, but it was not Germany. So in Germany, like, without a track record as a startup to get data, it's hard. Let's just say that.
Another currency, the value of your platform beyond the money, beyond the saving of for the water utility, which is the environmental impact. If they lose percentage of the water, it means something bad environment. Can you give us some more?
Yeah, so for example, if we look at like all the energy that has been put into it, we're talking about 257 million tons of CO2 per year. Wow. That are lost due to leakages. This is an estimate that we took from non-renewable water. I think we took like that 10% of the non-renewable water comes from leakages. That was our rough assumption all over the world, because you have some good data for Europe, you have some good data for like USA, but then you have a lack of data for many other countries regarding non-renewable water and actually leak losses. So this is very rough, but that's what we got down to.
Right. And then I was wondering about the, maybe I think this is outside the scope of your focus, which is the wastewater, because it's also is a big problem for the piping of the wastewater. There is a leakage there as well.
Actually, that's funny that you're talking about it. So we do need pressure on our pipes. Most of the sewages in Germany run over height differences.
Yeah.
But now we actually got our first sewage pipe, which is in a chemical park. That's why it's also one very long pipe, because it's buried underneath and they can't actually see it, because normally in chemistry parks, you have it above the road so you can actually see it dripping unless it's raining. But yeah, this one we can monitor because it's under pressure. However, the difficulty of sewage water is quite different, because the density actually changes, which makes the leak localization, especially the precise one, a challenge. I mean, I think we found a good solution, but we will only know when the client installs the pressure sensors.
Super. And my last question, Valerie, which is in terms of future roadmap, which is what's the next in pipe predicts innovation?
So, as you already know, the merging is like right now happening, and the predictive maintenance is the next huge brick in our product development, because we really want to get the window down. I mean, like, more than a year is kind of shitty for the budget planning of the utility. So we have to get down to a pipe burst window, which is less than a year. That's our goal for the next year.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. You can share the last advice with, well, the last experience with any young entrepreneur in water who is coming in water. What's kind of frustration, good thing that they need to deal with when it comes to the water industry?
Okay, the water industry. So you have the very organized data structure coming from some utilities, but don't get frustrated with, for example, GIS data missing a bunch of pipes, a bunch of clients, a bunch of wells. We've seen it all. We've been down that road, so you could also do it. And literally, talking helps a lot. So I'm a physicist, my co-founder is an IT person. Luckily, we had one with an economics background, but literally always set up bi-weekly meetings, or at least meetings once a month, because speaking resolves a lot of issues.
Super,
and
thank
also, if anybody wants to get in contact to talk about AI startup funding, like the public funding and stuff like that, you're welcome to contact me.
Thank you very much, Valerie.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.